Welcome to the Talking Shiitake podcast. This is Christian.
This is Katie.
Otherwise known as Katie Violent Lady.
Oh my gosh, we're going to go there right out of the gate. We're going to start name calling.
Hey, that is your hockey name.
That is not my hockey name. My hockey name has changed.
What is it now?
The Hammer.
It's the same thing.
No, there's a difference because a hammer you choose to use. Violence is something that you necessarily can't control. You're implying that I'm just a violent person, and that's not true. I just bring down the hammer when justice needs to be served.
I'd like to ask a nail what he thinks of a hammer.
Who?
A nail.
A nail. Yeah. A nail is just doing their job, don't you think?
So is a hammer.
That's what I'm saying.
Your job is to be a violent lady. What can I say?
I am probably one of the most timid people out there in the hockey rink.
I have loose cartilage in my knee that says differently.
Okay, so that's kind of how you and I met, right? Playing hockey?
That is how we met.
And so hockey's been kind of a central focus in your life, right?
For many years now.
There's something about it. It's more than just the physical aspect of the game. I think it's, I don't know, there's a mental part of the game that I think becomes addictive after you play for a while. And I think anybody who's played hockey can agree.
Yeah, and probably all sports to a certain extent. But hockey's a little different because it's got a little bit of, I guess, art because of the way you have to skate and move and violence. And it just keeps you challenged.
And you can never really master it. I guess kind of like golf, though. Like you can't really master the game. You can always improve. But the mental part of the game is cool because it has that. You know, you have to think so many moves ahead. Like they used to say Gretzky had like 5 moves ahead or something.
Yes, yes. He would. I remember hearing the story of when he was a kid. He would sit there with a piece of paper and just trace around the paper wherever the puck went for the whole game.
What?
And then, yeah, he would sit and he would just watch a game on TV and do this. And he learned where to go based on where those lines went because there was a pattern. They basically went to the same parts of the rink. And later on, when he became a pro, you could tell he would be where the puck was going.
Yeah, he was never where the puck was. It was always where it was going to be.
Right. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny we start off on hockey on this. So it's not going to just be about hockey, this podcast. But
right.
Sure hockey will come into it a lot.
Because it's a big part of our lives.
Right.
Of course, I'm not playing right now because the rink is destroyed. But other than that.
We have ice up here. I mean, I'm coming to you from the Arctic Circle right now where it's like -8 degrees.
Oh, my gosh. And it's, what, April?
Yes.
And it's -8 degrees.
Yeah. And when I flew up here just last week or a few days ago, I live outside of Anchorage. It would get up into the 40s, low 40s, upper 30s. And right now that is good spring weather where I live. Everybody's out walking their dogs, riding their bikes, avoiding the ice.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. But up here in Prudhoe Bay, it's a lot colder.
Did you skate the river?
I've been looking for the river to skate. I have this fear of falling through the river. So
that would really suck.
Or finding out that was just a movie and there's no real river in Alaska to skate like that.
Is there really a mystery Alaska?
There is no mystery Alaska.
There are
mysteries in Alaska, but there's no town called Mystery.
Oh, okay.
And surprisingly, sometimes I think on certain levels, the hockey is at a higher caliber in California.
Really?
Yeah. Well, we do have some pros from Alaska that are playing in the NHL, but and some of the kids are really good here, but I think just the level is amazing in California compared to Alaska.
Now you coached hockey as well, right?
Yes. Coached. I started playing and coached soon after that, and I think that just fed the addiction.
It is an addiction.
Yeah. And you learn a lot about yourself trying to coach kids and adults. I mean, I've done both or attempted to do both, and it's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you used to play on a really crazy hockey team, right?
I played on a crazy hockey team?
Yeah, it was in your women's league.
Oh, in the women's league, yeah. We used to play on a team called the Queens. because obviously the Kings fans, you know, Kings, Queens. That was a lot of fun. Women's hockey, I think, is a little bit different than men's hockey in the sense that it's probably less hitting, but a lot more hacking. And women don't just let things go on the floor.
A lot more hatred.
A lot more retaliation, and not just retaliation within the game. Retaliation like 8 games later. You know, yeah. Women just don't forget. Like, guys can, like, beat each other up on the rink and then go have a beer after, where women are like, I remember 2 seasons ago you did this to me. And there'd be a retaliation there. So women play a little bit different hockey than men, I think.
Is it more like real life, the difference between men and women?
In that sense, where the women don't let things go?
Yeah.
You mean that way? Yeah, I think that's true. It's definitely right. Representative. And, you know, you can see where people's true kind of personalities lie when you get them out there and you're pushed to the limit. You know, your true self kind of comes out, or maybe you, like, lose your facade or something.
That's an interesting take.
I mean, don't you agree? Because people have pushed you to the point where you've lost control, correct? I think I've actually witnessed it.
I do not recall this.
You don't recall losing control out there? So you're saying you were totally in control when you were, like, beating people up on the rink?
You make it sound like I got into a lot of fights. I didn't get into very many fights.
I think there's people that might disagree with you on that.
Isn't that interesting? I have built up this reputation that I don't think is completely accurate, but it works perfectly out there. I think people have actually thought I am more of a fighter than I am. And that probably kept me from getting punched a lot of times.
Do you think so?
I think so.
It didn't keep you from getting a lot of penalties.
I got a few.
A few.
I'm not, but I still think I did not lose control. Can think of one time where I lost control that you've been around.
Well, that's what I'm trying to determine. Is it losing control? Is punching somebody? Because that would be losing control for me. Maybe you were still in control at that point.
I don't recall punching very many people. I may have knocked them down. But most of the time, it wasn't punching.
Most of the time. Okay.
You're thinking of another guy we played with that, you know, those crazy Michigan guys.
Well, we know that's totally out of control. But I think, you know, like I said, your true personality comes out at that point.
I think that might be interesting. I'm curious to see what my true personality is through somebody else's eyes.
You know, that's an interesting take on that, too, because we see ourselves much differently than I think other people see us.
And that's probably a good thing.
That might be a good thing.
There's a
book called The Fifth Agreement, the follow-up to The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that, where you see yourself as one way. Like, if you were to picture yourself in, like, a theater, and you see yourself as a movie, and you watch your whole life play out on the movie, and then somebody next to you watches your life from their movie, meaning what role do you play in their lives? And they may see it totally different than you.
That makes sense. I tend to think most of the time I have a higher opinion of myself than maybe other people do. Or maybe I just there's, maybe it's confidence. Maybe I'm covering up for a lack of confidence. Who knows? But I do know I see myself a little differently.
So how do you see yourself? Or is that too crazy of a question?
That's pretty crazy. It depends on the situation, I think. I think I'm a calm person. I don't think I lose my cool very often. Even in hockey, I don't think most of the time. I have lost my cool a couple times. And it's never any fun to go apologize for calling somebody's wife a name or something like that.
Oh, my God. You know, we've all done stupid stuff like that for sure. So hockey's definitely, you know, something we enjoy. So tell us why you decided to do this podcast, Christian.
I just think part of it was I had these grand goals of changing the world, maybe. I'm not sure that's quite the case, but I see things a certain way, and I just wanted to talk about it. I love to listen to how other people see the world and different opinions. And you and I have always talked about this kind of stuff before. And I just figured maybe it'd be a little bit interesting to kind of have a conversation and see where it goes, and maybe eventually get some guests and see what they think of the world and how they can teach us about the world they live in, and maybe we can learn something and change the world that we enjoy.
Maybe we need to be the change we want to see. Isn't that the famous quote?
Yep, that and buy the world a Coke. We can do both.
If somebody wanted to interact with us, how would they get us a message?
Probably the best way is the Talking Shiitake Facebook page.
So they just like us on Facebook, Talking Shiitake. Is it talking or talking?
Talking.
Talking Shiitake on
And
Facebook. And then they can just send us a message and then we'll try and respond. Or we will
I'm sure.
respond. I mean, all
I'm
these
sure.
massive messages, we'll try and keep up.
Yeah, I think it, right now it's going to be pretty easy for us to respond.
Yeah.
And we'll see where that goes. It all depends on if we say something that's interesting. Hopefully there'll be just, like a few questions here and there, or contradictions or disagreements, and we can deal with that and make it more entertaining. I'm sure we have a couple friends that'll say some crazy stuff to us.
No, not our friends.
Yeah, it'll be entertaining. We'll get our left wing and right wing friends telling us how crazy we are, and then our
Isn't it?
crazy friends telling us how sane we are. I don't know. Do we have any crazy friends?
Every one of them.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's weird how we divide that too, like left wing and right wing, and how we have these labels that we identify other people with. And how are you identified, I wonder?
I think a lot of times I'm called a liberal, which I think is ridiculous. I don't see myself as having any views that should be labeled, but I can see why people that can consider themselves conservatives would call me that, because I have maybe non-traditional views. I'm okay to change. I want new ideas and making the world and our lives a better place. I think I've always been happy with living in the US, but that doesn't mean we can't be a better nation and a better people.
I think we can always improve.
I don't see myself or any particular group of people, whether it's US or any other part of the world, as being exceptional. I think that was the word. That's one of the controversies that came out recently from one of Putin's lectures, calling us or disagreeing with American exceptionalism. And I think we should be proud and happy of where we're from and where we live. We have a lot of opportunity,
It's true.
a lot of different things we can do to make this world a better place and enjoy our lives personally. We're very lucky with all the privileges we have, but that doesn't mean we can't get better. I'm very surprised by how much hatred you see from one side to the other, left, right to left.
Where does that hatred? I mean, that's true, because there's so much hatred in the world, and I just kind of wonder where that stems from, because I don't think we naturally hate as infants, right? I think that that's
Right.
part of our programming, that of hating each other.
I think there's a lot of maybe confusion going on, because everything's changed so much the last 10 or 20 years with
In
all
what
the
way?
technology. Well, we have so much technology
That's
that we
true.
can sit here. I can sit here in the Arctic Circle talking to you in California, and it's like nothing. We don't
Recording
have.
it and then uploading it to a system where other people can hear it. It's amazing technology. It really is crazy.
Yeah, and we're not spending all t kinds of money. It's pretty simple. I mean, back in when we were kids, I remember everybody's like would complain about long distance fees.
Oh yeah, that's true. Or recording. I remember having one of those little tape recorders, and you just hit, play and record on it.
Yeah,
You know,
you had
talking
to.
about you hit the two buttons and you record the tape. And we used to have this, actually a radio show called XYZ AM2 was my radio show. I didn't understand call letters back then. But and it was
I
all
still don't
commercials. The
understand
whole
them,
thing
but
was just commercials. It
really,
was funny, yeah.
I always used to record songs off the radio,
Oh yeah.
but do my own little DJing.
You would do your own DJing.
Yeah, I would be talking about it, and then when the day was over, I'd go and watch Solid Gold with my sister. And
Oh my God, what a dork.
yeah, we're kind of dating ourselves, but
Right.
Solid Gold was pretty good back then.
Solid Gold was the show.
That it was Andy Gibb, Marilyn McCoo, lip syncing.
Oh my gosh. I saw Journey on there. I think one of the first times I ever saw Journey when I became obsessed with them. I think it was on Solid Gold.
What were you thinking?
What? Journey's awesome.
Journey is awesome. That reminds me of I was talking with my daughter, and she was all excited because Queen's gonna is going is on tour again, and they have a lead singer named Adam Lambert, who won American Idol, and she was super excited because she loves Queen. She loved Freddie Mercury, and she thought Adam Lambert would do really well. So I get with my technology and pull up YouTube, probably the greatest invention ever.
Right.
And so I'm watching it, and it just wasn't the same.
It can't be. Freddie Mercury cannot be replaced. And I think the same thing with Steve Perry. I'm sorry. They say the new guy is just dead on, and I've heard it, and it's just not. I'm sorry. He's good. He's really good. He has a great voice, but he's not Steve Perry. I don't care what you say. Nobody's going to convince me otherwise, as many people that have tried.
It's not just the voice, it's the persona,
It
and
is. It's the passion behind the voice, too.
I think at some deep level we actually recognize that passion. And while someone can sound exactly the same, maybe at some deep level, especially if it's with a band we love,
It's more than just hitting the notes.
there's something that reaches deep within our brain to all those neural pathways that were you set up when we first started listening to whoever we loved, and you can tell the difference. You can tell that it's counterfeit.
You can, because there's something disingenuous about it. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have passion in what he's singing, but there's just something, there's a different intention behind the voice. And you can tell, especially like you're saying, with people that you really connected with as children. And when we hear that voice, there's something that triggers in us. And it can, evoke all kinds of emotions. I mean, you hear the song that played the first time you kissed, or the first time, you know what I mean? Like you met somebody, or you were out partying one night and you remember that night. It's related to that song. And it triggers an emotion in you. It's weird how you can have those little triggers that can take you back to a place. And songs do that very well.
Right. They create these pathways in your brain that just thicken so quickly, or get so much stronger. And I bet to the guys that are singing or taking over for those lead singers we loved would probably be the first ones to tell you that it's not quite the same. If they listen to themselves, they would know. They'd know that there's no comparison, and I think they're doing a great job, and the majority of them are extremely passionate. So the reason they're able to do that is because they love that artist. Adam Lambert singing Freddie Mercury because he loved Freddie Mercury's voice.
Right.
And just
And
like most of us.
good tribute. I'm not saying, that's a bad thing. It's just not the same.
I'm happy that that someone like my daughter or a new group of people get to hear the music, because the band is great too.
That's true.
It's just sad that, maybe we didn't appreciate Freddie Mercury when he was here. And or a band like Journey when they were still together, and you see that with all the bands. They or not all of them, but a lot of them, they fight and break up, and it's just never the same. They might have a couple albums
It's
that are brilliant, but then once they get a little popular, it's just
well, you
different
can see the
pressures, less
reaction.
passion.
Yeah, like the reaction, sorry to interrupt, but the reaction, like from the Beatles when they broke up, people were devastated, crying in the streets, like how that affected you just because this band broke up.
And while I've never felt that passionate about any musician, I have enjoyed different bands, different musicians, and kind of yearned to go back to those days when the music was perfect. And maybe it's that time period. There's always from say maybe 13, 14 until you're maybe your mid-20s, where I think you're more in tune to that kind of thing. The music touches you differently. It helps you grow. It forms the way you view the world, if sort of, you're lucky.
Yeah, I think because you have more life experience at that point, or you're starting to, you realize that it's kind of an awakening at that age. And I think that's why the music really does connect with you. You find the music that maybe goes along with the path that you're living. And that's why we all have our different tastes in music.
Yeah, it's like your best friend at the time. It gets you through the worst times. And we all know at those ages, everything seems so dramatic to most people.
That's
because
true.
They are coming into their own. All the hormones change the way we are, the way we think. And teenagers are just the every little thing is major. I can still think back to the first girl that I really dated and how devastating it was when it ended. And now I'm like, really wasn't that big of a deal. I didn't even really like her that much.
Is that when you started listening to Prince?
I listened to Prince before that. I'd given up most of, I still listen to him, but not at the same level. But the first time that I really had a girlfriend that I liked, I think I'd already gotten past being able to say every line in Purple Rain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every line. It was just on the other night, and I was joking around. It's like, I used to know every line, and then I started remembering some of them and annoying everybody with it.
Did you know what it sounds like when doves cry?
I do, but that's because I used to hunt doves. So
is that why? Oh my gosh, bird killer.
Yep. Don't call me Ted Nugent.
I won't. Ted for president.
Please never.
What? Never, you don't ever. Think Ted Nugent would make a good president?
I think he would make a horrible president.
Do you think it would be worse than the president we currently have in office?
I think it would be the worst president ever.
Come on.
Yes.
I'm not saying he'd be super great, but he's better than some alternatives.
Like David Duke?
He's better than David Duke. I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually saw David Duke speak live, not because I'm a racist, but because he was in Louisiana. And I wanted to hear what he had to say because I didn't know anything really about him. And he's a dynamic speaker. You know, he can suck you into his beliefs thinking, yeah, we all want to be equal. What's wrong with everybody being equal? You know, I mean, that's kind of where he pretends to stand from. But then knowing his history, and those who don't know, he was the Grand Wizard of the KKK. And he was actually elected into office in Metairie, Louisiana. So that's, you know, kind of... You know, shows you that he did have this kind of dynamic power about him. It's really strange.
So did Jim Jones.
And Jim Jones, Charles Manson.
Charles Manson, Adolf Hitler.
I mean, these people were able to persuade people to do what they wanted in a very, I don't know, it goes against the grain of human nature, and they were able to make people perform. I mean, Jim Jones making everybody drink the Kool-Aid and kill themselves. Over 900 people drank Kool-Aid and committed suicide because this man claimed to be Jesus Christ. I mean, to me, that's some serious power. I mean, I'm not saying in awe of it. It's a horrible thing, but that is pretty impressive, I guess.
It's impressive and scary.
And scary, right.
And even if somebody has that power for good, it's a dangerous thing. It's really... I think it's really hard to harness that kind of power continuously and not mess it up. There's just too much pressure in this world. If we had somebody on the opposite end of the spectrum from a Jim Jones that was only doing good in the world, do you think he could continue to do good, or she?
Well, I think if you understand the other side of it, not that I totally do, but if you flip it over and you have somebody like the Dalai Lama or, you know, somebody who does great things.
Mother Teresa?
That's the name I was thinking of. So like Mother Teresa, those people don't really need to create a cult to worship them because I think they understand on the other side that the flip side of things, you don't need that. You don't need control over people. So that's, there is no, unless you want to look at like the church. That's the only thing I can think of, where you have priests and you have followers and a sort of dogmatic sort of system put into place where people follow you. You're not really asking them to do horrible things to other people or themselves. I guess that could be considered a good cult.
I think maybe if everybody is in a good frame of mind, if maybe the leadership of, say, whatever church, not any particular religion, it could be, you know, Islam, Christianity, whatever, mm-hmm. Mormonism. If you get somebody in there that maybe has some of our normal human traits that are a little weaker or can be dangerous, then we have an issue. And I think that's maybe why that kind of power should be so rare, that whether it's good or bad, very few Jim Jones and Hitler's could be around, because that's an extreme form of power that is just almost an anomaly, just like on the other end of the spectrum, a Dalai Lama or a Mother Teresa. There's not really any of them. There's another anomaly. It's very,
very rare.
Yeah, and both sides inspire their followers.
And I think that's it right there. I think you hit it right on the head, where both sides inspire their followers, which means their followers, they hit them at a certain time or a certain vulnerability maybe in their lives where they can inspire them. Because you can only be inspired if you let yourself. It connects with you, just like we were connecting with the music. If I connect with them, then I can be dissuaded or persuaded by them. But only then.
Right. And what causes that connection? Do we have something missing in our life that makes it a dangerous connection, or something that we've learned or been exposed to that make us able to stand on our own and see something but still be able to stand on our own from it? So say if it's a quote unquote good thing, if we can sit there and say, oh yeah, I believe in that. I think that'll make me a better person if I follow that person, or if I aspire to be a little bit more like that person. Maybe that's the difference, is aspire to be a little bit more like somebody as opposed to following somebody. Because if you're trying to maybe emulate somebody, that gives you, you're giving yourself a lot of power there. You're not just following somebody because you need a leader, or you're lost and you want somebody to guide you out of the darkness. If you're able to sit there and be like somebody just because you like what you see, that can be bad too. But I just think that there's more personal, I guess, involvement in it and personal responsibility if you make that choice, as opposed to being part of the flock.
Mm-hmm. So, but we all are striving to like become something or someone or create this persona of ourselves. So where are we getting the information? I mean, who's truly themselves, I guess? I don't know who we truly are, maybe. Maybe that's what we're struggling to find out. Maybe that's why we're drawn to some of these leaders, where we're thinking, oh, they have the answers, so I'm going to follow them because I feel like I don't have the answers. And I think they do that in church a lot, where you feel insecure. Oh my gosh, this person has dedicated their lives to God. I must follow them. They obviously know what's going on.
Right. And I think you're right. And maybe even in politics nowadays.
Oh, that's a good point.
Both they'll follow a conservative or a liberal, almost like those will follow somebody in church. I just think there has to be a little bit, if there's more personal responsibility, you're able to walk in that path and not be dangerous, not hurt other people, not damage yourself. We got to be responsible in the end for ourselves. Number one, above everything else. Even if we're not responsible for ourselves, we can't help those around us. We can't be there for them, and we can't move in this world, I think, with a clearer view of what we should be.
It's almost like that gas mask thing, not gas mask, but the oxygen mask that falls from the airplane.
Right.
Where it says, you know, make sure that you put the oxygen on yourself first before assisting others. And I think that's a good analogy of, we all need to put a little oxygen on ourselves before we start preaching to everybody else.
And I think we're seeing a lot of people, a lot of this world, busy focusing on everybody else instead of taking a couple breaths from the oxygen mask.
Well, we're going to take a couple breaths right now because we're going to take a break.
We can take a break. I need a breath.
Okay.
All right.
We'll be back.
We'll be back.
And that's exactly what we're doing, right? Talking shiitake.
We are talking shiitake.
About all kinds of stuff. We kind of bounce all over the place, but that's kind that's of better. What we're doing here. And really, it's just our perspective on kind of where our take on what's going on. Different perspective, that's all it is.
You know, we spend all day bouncing around anyway, so it's just like real life.
It is, too.
Bouncing from one thing to another, multitasking. What kind of technology do you have in front of you, Katie?
Mass technology.
You have what? Your phone opened up, your computer?
Phone, computer. I'm online. There's two other people online using the same bandwidth. I mean, it's just insane amount of technology. The routers, the network, the infrastructure of the entire internet at your fingertips. It's insane.
I'm up here with polar bears with a... with a laptop and an iPad and an iPhone, a radio so people can call me if they get in trouble around here. So
you're like close to the North Pole, and yet you have all this technology right there at your fingertips.
I do. And not too long ago, they didn't have that up here. It was pretty ridiculous. Just recently, we got a upgrade in the internet, so I could actually do this podcast from here.
It's
I wonder
amazing.
If anybody else is doing podcasts from in the Arctic Circle.
You might be one of the first.
Yep, at least in this country.
Right.
Of course, there's not much of this country that's in the Arctic Circle, so.
There's not many people there either.
No. There's only people working where I'm at. So we were talking earlier about how, I guess, a little bit of meanness and anger and hatred between the left and the right.
It's true.
What's your view on that? Why do you think this is happening?
My honest view is that it's on purpose, that there's a reason that people want to keep humanity divided. They don't want humans working together as a whole, as a group of people. I think that's why we have our flags. Oh, I'm going to wave my flag. My flag's better than your flag. My religion's better than your religion. My, you know, the way I live is better than the way you live. And we're constantly judging other people because this is how we've been programmed. I think it's a brainwashing program that is keeping all of us divided because they realize, and by they, I mean those, the elite ruling this system, they realize that that's how you conquer, divide and conquer. It's the first rule of war. You divide people up so that they don't work together.
When do you think this started and by who?
I think it started probably at the dawn of probably the written word. That's about how far back I think it goes.
I can see some of it. I'm not sure that there's a big group of people. As much as I love the Fox Mulder ways, it's really hard for me to imagine a big group of people that are controlling us all. I just can't see it. But I do believe money talks, and maybe that's where some of it's coming from.
And I don't know necessarily it's about money or so much as it is about power.
I'm not able to see power being that enjoyable, but I know that a lot of people through the ages have. I'd much rather have money than a bunch of power.
Well, I guess they kind of go hand in hand a little bit.
True. I want the money so I can have the power.
Because money controls. Money, you pay people off. You can do anything you want.
Let's hope that if I ever got some money, I wouldn't do that.
And that's true. And that's really what it comes down to is intention. You know, what is their intention? Maybe their intention by they, again, I mean the ruling elite, their intention is to, make a civilization of hard workers where we're all just going to do what we need to do and abide by the laws they've given us and not really challenge anything and any belief system that, you know, we're just going to buy into it hook, line, and sinker and not really think for ourselves. Because wouldn't that be an easier person to control?
That would be, but it's just hard for me to get my head around. I mean, Alex Jones maybe would be right there with you. But he's kooky.
So you're saying I'm kooky?
Hey, you were the one saying they and the New World Order. Well, you didn't say New World Order, but
well, in so many words.
All right, I won't put any more Alex Jones words into your mouth, but.
And, you know, maybe there is a new world order, but who's to say that it's bad? Maybe that's what we need. Maybe we do need a global government. Maybe they're the ones actually working for us, trying to fight to keep us united. Maybe they're the ones who are actually trying to help us out.
It could be. If everybody profits, everybody wins, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe everybody blames the church for thousands and millions or whatever deaths throughout the years, but can we maybe pin it on nationalism?
Right. And there's nothing wrong with being patriotic, really. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you have to denounce your country and your heritage and who you are and your religion. And it's okay to embrace that and live it and believe it. But it's when you start chastising other people for their beliefs and where they live and where they're coming from. That's where I think it becomes divisive.
The religion they follow or don't follow. It's if we lived within our own homes and lives, maybe it'd be a lot better than looking outside and calling somebody else names.
Mm-hmm. Sort of look inward more.
Well, it's like unless we can get into politics like that. Everybody is after Obama like he's this evil thing. Why is that?
Well, I think that's part of how he's being portrayed in the right-wing media. Just like the flip side. Left-wing does the same thing. That's the part that's keeping us divided. We buy into these things. And, you know, I don't know that Obama has a lot of power, to be honest with you. I don't think the president of the United States has as much power as we'd like to think. I think they really are just puppets.
Well, it's interesting to see the hatred. And it's a lot. Some people chalk it up to racism. I don't think that's the case. I think the level of hatred with Obama is just unbelievable. And I'm not sure it's as fact-based as I hear.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious to see what others think, especially anybody that, you know, that's listening to us. I'm sure they have an opinion one way or another. This would be something good. Educate me.
Yeah, let us know. Facebook, Talking Shiitake.
And Talking Shiitake on Twitter.
On Twitter now.
Exactly.
So there we go. So let us know what you think. But
facts or not facts, as long as it doesn't get racially biased or viewed. Or
I think part of it, though, is that, you know, you're messing with people's health insurance. People are getting cancellation letters. When you start messing with people's stuff like that, they get irritated. I think it was a huge mistake to try and tackle that. And then honestly, I truly believe the people around Obama are not a good system for him. They're not a good group of people. They're not guiding him in the right way. And they're certainly not helping his light, how he's being portrayed at all. I mean, he's put some incompetent people in his system.
Maybe they put those people into the system so that they could push their agenda.
And very well could be.
It's interesting to see this the way things are. I mean, we talk about the health care and people getting letters canceling their health care. Is it really that many people?
It's enough people to cause a stir. And that's all you need. It's a perception. It doesn't have to be reality.
This is true. So you get one or two people getting a letter, maybe more than that.
There's thousands.
Thousands is not that much, though.
It's not, but I mean, it's more than just one or two.
And while it may be horrible for the people that are suffering through that and that change, but it's not something that should necessarily lead on Fox News or Rush Limbaugh.
But if you're using those things, those flaws to try and persuade the public opinion.
should this kind of media sway the public opinion? Is that a legitimate thing to do?
And you know what? You know, I think they absolutely have every right to do it. It's us. We're the ones who do or do not buy into it.
But we're buying into it.
We are, because we're not educated. This is where we think we're getting our education. If you control the information, then you control the people. So they're controlling the information. We're buying the information. Therefore, we're buying into it. If we don't buy into it, then they've got no power. But we are.
What if we're just buying into it because they're agreeing with us?
We think they're agreeing with us. They say what they think we want to hear.
It seems to be working.
Oh, they're masters at it now.
Both sides have nothing but confirmation bias that tell us or tell their viewers or listeners that they are right.
And it's interesting. What makes somebody buy into one side or the other, I wonder?
I was raised in a family, or my father was very conservative. He worked in the defense industry. And so I should definitely be conservative. Mm-hmm. And while I may have some fiscally conservative views, I think that this world needs to be different in a lot of other ways. And I'm not going to be the one to say how it should be. I sometimes get questioned, okay, if you think there's a problem, what's the solution?
That's true. Where's the solution?
I don't know what the solution. I don't think I need to have a solution to say there's a problem.
Well, that's interesting, because my dad was a Kennedy Democrat. So then when I became old enough to vote, I became like a Reagan Republican. But what's interesting is that we both had a lot of same views on almost everything.
Right.
You know, so here's one. So you would think extreme differences, but really we came together on a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So these labels don't necessarily are everything that we believe.
And while I can say I question why there's so much hatred for Obama, I could go, and we'll go back to Reagan, and say, why is there so much love for Reagan?
Right.
It's the same office. They've made the same types of presidential mistakes, which you're going to make because you're leading a very diverse nation and a very powerful nation that has to have some control over other nations in order to financially be strong.
But we didn't have 24-hour news during Reagan either. The Iran-Contras could have been a much bigger deal.
It would have been on MSNBC.
That's what I'm saying. So if we'd had those kind of news stations and that type of information in the internet, that could have been blown completely out of proportion too, where I think a lot of it was we didn't know too much information about what was going on there.
But I'll use Americans in this case, but humans in general, because it's the same in every nation. We know that it's a different world, that we do have 24-hour news. We have people calling themselves journalists that are just giving you opinions. The news is basically opinion anymore. So we all know this, but we still get caught up in it. We want to talk about how one group of people are going to bring down the whole nation, or you know, the gays are going to bring down the nation.
Is that what you're saying? The gays are going to bring down the nation, Christian?
No, and then go the opposite way. All the people that want to have these guns are going to bring down the nation. I mean, why does it have to be one extreme or the other?
Because we have extremists.
Why are we listening to them? We had extremists attack this country and went to war with them, and now we're becoming, or we're following extremists in the media. And about every time we start saying, hey, what's going on with all this hatred and extremist views? Kim Kardashian comes out, or Miley Cyrus says something dumb.
Some sort of distraction.
Justin Bieber gets arrested. What's going on? Right when we start to pick it up, we get distracted.
It's true. I mean, the whole world's going to turn their head when they see Miley Cyrus twerking, right? I mean, and that's, what does that say about us?
I don't think it should have to be a negative. I think it's natural for us to want to watch something different. Watch a what we call a star rise and fall or dance around or act stupid, that's kind of natural. I don't think we should look down upon ourselves for it, but we shouldn't be distracted by it either.
Don't let us take us off the eye off the real game.
Right. And but a lot of people think, oh, we got to have a revolution. I think that's ridiculous. I think historically speaking, revolutions don't work. It worked for us, but that's one revolution in countless revolutions throughout the
history.
Throughout history.
But haven't we constantly been doing this, trying to conquer other things? Even like back in tribal times, don't we like go into their tribe and try and take their food and try and take this land? And we're constantly conquering other cultures, other people. Is that something I wonder that's innate in us to do?
That is what a lot of people have thought. But do we really go and conquer other tribes or nations just because that's part of in our DNA? Or do all the times of war within tribal times, thousands of years ago, mm-hmm. after the hunter-gatherer times, but before we really became civilized?
Right. Pre-farming.
A lot of evidence shows that most violence occurred when the resources became scarce, not when one human wanted to subvert another group of humans.
So it was more for survival then.
Yes, and I think that's natural. We are built to survive, so we are going to get a little dangerous when the water starts to disappear or our food sources. I think the way we're programmed.
So it comes down to the fight or flight.
Kind of, yes. But I don't believe that. I think it's hard to prove that we have this innate violence in us. If you take a look at Jane Goodall and all of her studies on chimps, a lot of it shows that chimps are warlike, or a lot like humans. They commit violence on other groups of chimps and take their resources, kill each other, and we've made it out to be like they're like us, or we're like them. We're very warlike.
But now, did she do studies on chimps or gorillas?
Gorillas.
Was it chimps in the mist or gorillas in the mist?
It was gorillas in the mist, but she also,
I'm just
because
playing.
It's another ape. I mean, she did studies on chimps.
So they're all the same to you. You're a speciesist.
I am. They don't have a tail. They're an ape. So my honey
don't
dog.
Don't some monkeys have tails?
Monkeys have tails.
That's apes, what I'm saying. Oh, apes are the only ones that don't have tails? What about baboons don't have tails? They've got that big red butt.
But they're an ape.
They're an ape?
Not a monkey.
Oh, they're not a monkey. let me ask you this. I kind of got off subject. Sorry.
That's okay. Ask away.
Do you think we evolved from apes?
I think potentially we did. I think the evolutionist and the creationist probably both have it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're not maybe studying the subject the way they should.
I agree.
I think there's some similarities, and we're getting better at figuring out where we came from or why, but we're a long ways off.
Because you think of the whole Darwinism, you know, not that he didn't have some good points, but I think there's a difference between adaptation and evolution. You know, giraffes having longer necks because the vegetation was higher and those giraffes with longer necks survived, and then their genetics got passed down to their children, you know, and the whole natural selection thing. I understand that. That makes sense. But they haven't evolved at that point into a different species.
Right.
That's really just adaptation. So if we're using that as a form of the basis of evolution, I think we're way off base on that, don't you think?
I think we're still at a simplistic place, that we're just now with being able to understand DNA a lot better. I think we're getting there, but I think we're a long ways off, and all the different sides are holding on tight to what they've written and believed and taught and followed for a lot of years. And I think once we can get a little bit past that, have some rational views and open minds, we might start to find the truth. We may never find the truth. And many people of faith have already found their truth, and
What are
people
your
that have faith.
personal beliefs on that? Do you have a personal take on that?
I think that I'm open to a lot of things right now on that, but I think there is some form of evolution. Whether it touches us humans or not is a different thing. I'm waiting to be taught.
There's some interesting theories on it, and one of the ones that I kind of lean toward, or I don't know, it seems interesting or plausible, is that there is some sort of extraterrestrial intervention there. When you think of the rib of Adam that's portrayed in the Old Testament in the Bible, Genesis, I believe, and they talk about taking the rib and creating man. And what we know, like you were saying about where we are at with genetics these days, that we know that you can take the marrow from a bone and there's actually genetics in there. So if you had an advanced species that actually came across a bone of a previous civilization, they could actually take the genetics of that bone if they had some sort of ovum and create a new race with it, if they had the technology to do it. We're not quite that advanced yet, but maybe somebody who came here was. And it kind of goes with the whole story. And this is something that they talk about with the Mayans. Quetzalcoatl took the bone from the earth and made man in his own image, right? I mean, these are things that we've heard throughout the years, but we never really question. We never really say, what does that really mean? How did God get a bone from the dirt and then make Eve from the rib of Adam? I mean, what is this saying? Nobody questions that. That's just going to be, oh, yeah, that's what happened. God works in mysterious ways.
And I think that could be the mysterious ways could be the case, but we're missing this part of the story.
We're missing part of the story. That's what I'm saying. But nobody questions it.
Because
I shouldn't say nobody. I'm sure there's people that do.
I think there's a whole TV series on the History Channel that questions it. Are they right? I mean, probably not completely. There may be some truth in there. Just like there's you can look in religious teachings and beliefs from every part of the world and find some truth. Now, are we grasping on to what we have in our possession that was written down thousands of years ago and taking that as the absolute truth when we're missing some of that something's been lost, changed, hidden?
That's true.
And we're stuck without moving forward because we want to hold on to this way we've always believed, because it's maybe it's easier. We feel it's right in some ways. I just have an open mind about it, and I'm pretty sure that we'll get a couple comments on this that'll be of differing views, but I just think there's a lot of mystery to this world, and we need to be open to it and ready for it and investigate it.
I totally agree. I think the one thing, you know, people say, is there anything that you know for sure? The only thing I know for sure is that we don't know a whole lot of anything.
No.
You know, the more I know, the more I realize we don't know crap. We don't know what's going on. We really don't.
No. And we've learned a lot in the last 20 years. It's amazing how far we've come, but we're not there. We're not close.
And people say, you know, you scratch the surface. I think we're just recognizing that there even is a surface. That's where we're at.
And maybe that is why there is so much anger and emotion, negative emotion going on right now, because we're scratching the surface and it's scary.
It kind of makes everything that you believe kind of just fall apart. And you're like, wait, I've been believing this my whole life. And then now I come to find out that this may not be exactly how it went down. It's scary.
And I think we shouldn't be afraid of that, because that's just the part of the process of growing.
I totally agree.
We don't have to go into it feeling alone or lost or lied to. It's, you know, it's like that saying, everything is exactly the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Or from another saying from one of my favorite TV shows, this has all happened before and it will happen again. So
interesting. Will it happen the same way, though?
Well, there might be Cylons involved or something like that, but that's a whole nother talk. No another talk?
Oh, yeah, on that. Yeah, that's going to have to be a whole nother podcast, don't you think?
But I like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, you're gonna have to carry that one because I don't know anything about it.
Well, I'm giving you a chance to watch it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I'll watch Da Vinci's Demons.
If I watch Battlestar Galactica,
Yes.
oh my gosh, I don't know if I can make that deal.
Not the old 80s by your command kind. The new one.
Right, I'll give it a shot. It's not a fair trade because Da Vinci's Demons is way better.
Same composer, Behrman
Same
Brewery.
composer. So if it's the same music, that must be the same then.
Walking Dead has the same composer, and that's pretty amazing.
I don't like that show either.
Because it's scary.
I just don't dig the zombie thing.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just has, so many people are into the zombies. And, people
Well,
have it on their cars and they have all this stuff. And it just doesn't appeal to me.
You're fighting the power.
I am.
You're trying not to follow the flock.
It really just has no appeal to me to watch zombie people. It's actually kind of disturbing. I don't want those images in my head. I have enough disturbing images in my head. I don't need to add more.
I don't watch the zombie people. I watch the characters that are trying to get away from the zombie people.
It's intense though and stressful.
It is stressful. As soon as the opening song comes on, I get nervous. I used to have it as my ringtone, but I'd get all nervous when somebody would call me, and it's for no reason.
There
So,
we go back to those triggers, that
right.
music that triggers an emotion. And now, man, I'm telling you, from the very beginning, we've been programmed by these triggers. What do you feel like when somebody flashes you the American flag? You're like, oh, that's America. When you see American flag amongst, other countries and or the Olympics, you feel an affinity to that flag. You feel an emotion to it. Or somebody flashes you the symbol of swastika. You're like, oh my gosh, that evil bastard Hitler. We have these
Right.
emotions connected. All they have to do is flash a simple symbol in front of our face, and we instantly have that emotion. That's total control.
I think you're right. But I do think if I look at the American flag during the Olympics, I think completely different than in general. In the Olympics, it's my team.
Right, that's
And
what I'm saying. You feel like, oh, that's me. That's who represented, that's my representation.
right. And I don't think negatively when I see the American flag. I think sometimes I get a little, the way it's used in the real world is not always the best way. I don't have an I personally love living in the US. I think it's a great place. Like we were saying, it's tons of opportunity, tons of great people. As humans, we're not better than any other group of people based on where we were born or where we live.
Does it
I mean,
make you
we
angry if somebody burns the flag?
it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not a put down to me, and that's maybe because I'm from the end of the Cold War as opposed to the middle of it or the beginning of it. I can maybe see why that would make a lot of the older generations angry. I it our young the generation, our generation and those younger getting angry over that, I think they don't even understand because they don't have the same basis for it. It's not the Cold War always felt to the previous generations like a war. Maybe even worse than a real war because there was no climax, there was no fixing it, there was no fighting. But so there was always tension, there was nervousness, hatred. We were worried about dying at any time. But anybody younger that gets all upset about that, I don't think they quite understand what that kind of fear is. They might fear a terrorist or something like that.
Right, it's a different kind of fear, but I think it's genuine there, genuinely there with 9/11, people that experienced that, the Iraq War. They're experiencing their friends going off to war, dying in war. I mean, there's still, I mean, that's a real war.
I think you're right, but I don't think it touched daily as many lives. It touched the soldiers' families and friends, but not the rest of us. The rest of us might have worried here and there about getting on a plane, going into a public area if
Well, yeah, it
there was.
affects how you get on the plane. You got to take your shoes off. You got to take your belt off. You got to take your clothes off. You got to go through this puffy thing that sprays air all over you. like things did change. It changed our entire way of travel for sure.
But I don't think, and some people will tell you differently. When I just went through the scanner, I go through it every couple weeks, coming to work and going home, and it doesn't scare me. I don't think of it. I take off my shoes, throw them up on the belt, and hope the tourist in front of me hurry up. But other than that, I don't think it changes our life and maybe in a way it doesn't need to. But I don't have that emotional fear that our parents had or our grandparents. I don't, even now with Russia going into Crimea and everybody trying to drum up our old enemy, I just don't feel like that. And
Who's the real enemy,
some might
though?
call
I
me.
don't think we can identify the real enemy.
I think we can look in the mirror and see the real enemy.
Yeah, that's a good
It's
point.
we are our own worst enemy at all times. And while bad things may happen in this world, to good people, if we look in the mirror, that's the person that right there that can hurt us the most or help us the most.
You got that right. That's a good way to close it out. We only got a couple seconds left. You got anything else you want to say out there before we close it out?
We kind of bounced around a lot on this podcast, but anything that we've said, don't have to agree with us. Just do some research. Look at it from the sides of your enemy, so-called enemy.
And we want to see your views too. So make sure you hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, Talking Shiitake.
Well, and we'll do our best to answer you. Till next time, Katie.
Christian.
We will both talk to shiitake. Not the rest of tonight.
Right.